From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruriak. Strong north winds are back. Evacuations on both sides of the Kincade Fire expanded overnight. The fire actually expanded too, even though containment is up now to 15% as of this morning's briefing. PG&E had begun the process of restoring power to some customers yesterday, but with the return of the winds, PG&E has started new phases of shutoffs in more than 30 counties. You can find a map and plug in your address on our website. That's capradio.org. Corrine Hines wrote an opinion piece that was published in the New York Times on October 24th, and it was titled, "What Does It Mean to Lose Power on a Farm?" Corrine and her husband own Sun Tracker Farm. It's a small vegetable and pastured poultry farm in the Capay Valley, Guinda, California, to be specific. And Corrine is joining us by phone. Hi there. Glad to have you with us on the program.
Hi.
So your farm, Corrine, is in the area of more planned power shutoffs. Do you have power now, and how are you managing this?
Yes, we have power now because we're in a section of our valley that turned the power back on yesterday, luckily, and the winds haven't picked up yet. So we're not quite sure if we're going to lose power because we've had no notifications of either way.
Would you describe your land, Corrine, the terrain of your farm, what's around you?
Yeah, so the Capay Valley is a beautiful little valley. It's has a nice valley floor, but the hills are covered in a lot of vegetation, which burned actually last year in the county fire. And then we have a lot of grassland, and our farm itself is bordering the Cache Creek, and we have a pasture for our poultry, our livestock, and then a vegetable operation. And we have a well that waters everything, but right now it's run off of electricity, which is a problem when the power goes off.
In this piece that you wrote in the New York Times, in the first paragraph you wrote about adjusting to a new California reality, which you say is that fire will always be knocking at our door. Is this something new that you're thinking about, or did you know it was always a risk, just much farther away than it is now?
Well, I think climate change has definitely exacerbated the situation. We haven't had history of California so intense swings of drought and then intense rain, which makes fire hazard a lot more intense. And I think any Californian feels this, but particularly in a rural area on a farm, and then with these new shutoffs with electricity, it definitely makes the challenges a lot greater. And I think from here on out, it's going to only get worse unless we drastically change things. But that's going to take a whole world effort, really, to mitigate the effects of climate change.
What specifically was going on when you decided to write this piece for the New York Times? And as you sat down to write it, what were you hoping that anyone reading it would understand?
So it was actually, we came off of the couple really windy days a few weeks ago where it was the first power shutoffs. And there wasn't any big fires going on, but I think it kicked off this October fire season that we normally have to deal with in California. And as I mentioned in the piece, PG&E this last year has really started changing the way they come to our valley, and they've been cutting back trees, and you can tell that they're trying to change things to make fire hazard a little less. But in my opinion, it's not enough. It's not a long-term solution to be continuing to try to fix and take care of these dangerous power lines that are ranked all across our valley and all of California. And, it's just been molding in my mind that we need a long-term solution for our state.
You write, Right now, there's no financial incentive for PG&E to reach out to the far corners of California and rebuild its electrical grid because it's expensive and doing so would not increase their profits. When a fire burns everything down, California taxpayer dollars pay to bail out a private company that should be public. It sounds like a bigger conversation that you've been having, not only in your own family and farm situation, but in the Valley. Tell me more about your views on PG&E and how this has been handled.
Yeah, so like I said in the article, there is no financial incentive for them to come out to our really, you know, small, forgotten communities in rural California, which people may think, oh, California, it's so rich, you know, all these big cities, but there's still a huge population of the state that lives in areas that are small and relatively low income and, you know, have a lot of just working class people. And it's a lot of money to bury electric.
Oh, I think we just lost Corrine. We'll wait a moment here while she gets back on the line. I'll read a little more of the opinion piece that she wrote.
Oh, I'm right here.
Oh,
I'm
there
so
you
sorry.
Are. Okay.
Sorry. The reception might be the rural communities. We have bad reception. Can you hear me now? Yeah. So what I was saying was rural communities, we don't have a lot of money. We can't offer all the money big cities can to PG&E. And so what the PG&E doesn't want to spend all this overhaul investment to, you know, bury our lines and redo our electrical systems. And so, you know, I lost my train of thought.
That's okay. Let me jump in here, Corrine, and say that when power goes out, you're on a small farm, and you have to use a combination of systems to try to keep going. Will you tell me what the fallback choices are for you?
Yeah, so we don't have a fallback choice really on our small farm because my husband and I recently started our farm, and you know it's a lot of investment to make one thing and buy a tractor and buy a rototiller and keep everything alive. So we don't have the, you know, $60,000 it'll cost to buy a big generator that will fuel our well and also our walk-in cooler and our freezers. So right now we just have a small generator to take care of our freezers and our home, and then we just been scrambling when the power goes out to fill water tanks and prioritize our animals and some of our crops. But this winter, we're really going to sit down and make a plan of how we can finance and build a sustainable backup electricity system.
I want to read another paragraph from your opinion piece. You wrote, "We are thankful that PG&E is taking steps to prevent the wildfires that their power lines can cause. I'd trade my farm in a heartbeat if it meant saving even one of the lives lost in last year's fires. But it is not sustainable to damage agriculture, one of California's most important yet most financially struggling industries, every time the wind blows." And is that the answer to your question, what does it mean to lose power on a farm?
Yeah, it's a big burden, and it can be disastrous. And even the larger farms that I'm, you know, friends with in the Valley that have been farming for 40 years, they have backup systems. But if the power went out in August when it's 110 degrees Celsius or Fahrenheit out, then they might lose everything. And, you know, it can be catastrophic for a farm because farmers don't make a lot of money, and we're just farming because we think it's meaningful and we want to have a positive effect on the food system and the climate. But adding this burden to us could mean the end of some businesses and some family-run farms and local, you know, local economies. So we need a solution, and I want, you know, the higher-ups in Sacramento, I hear them say, oh, this is unacceptable that PG&E is doing this. Well, what are you going to do about it? You can't just say it's unacceptable. We need some action.
And what do you think a possible solution or solutions might be? You did write about some of this.
Yeah, so burying the electric lines would be a big, big start, because it would allow us to have electricity even if it's windy out. And also, long term, I think it would be better infrastructure. And also, so the CPUC, the California Utility Commission, they, in my, I'm not an expert, but in my opinion, they haven't ever really enforced PG&E to change the way they run their company and to make investments in rural parts of California. So we need a stronger enforcement system. And the fact that when PG&E has, you know, declares bankruptcy, well, Californians are the ones that bail them out in the long term. And so why is it still a private company when really it's public people's money that is controlling this utilities company? So in my opinion, it should become a publicly owned government run, owned by the people company, and our money can go towards something and that would benefit us all. And then also, really, farmers in my opinion need more help in how to mitigate the effects of climate change, because we're out here, you know, really feeling the effects. Every year we have drought or intense rain and flooding, and we don't have a lot of government help, or, you know, as I said, it's hard for farmers to make ends meet at times. And if we had more flexibility to change our farming practices to fight climate change and to invest in technology and practices that will really sequester more carbon and allow us to protect our fields when we have intense climate swings, then that's a huge step.
You're listening to Corinne Hines. She is talking about some of the thoughts that she wrote in an opinion piece that was published in the New York Times on October 24th. She and her husband Robert own SunTracker Farm in California's Capay Valley. What kind of response have you had? What have you heard back about this piece?
So all of my local friends and communities and people throughout the state have been, you know, saying how much they appreciate and agree with what I'm saying. And some people think I could have been harsher. And then, you know, folks in the city who I'm friends with, or even just people I don't know, have said it's a really interesting perspective and they didn't realize it. And also, I've had some national contacts, and a lot of farmers are saying that, well, I may be in a different state where we have different problems, but we're also feeling the effects of climate change. And I think the one thing that's been missing in the response is I haven't heard anything from any people who actually have power to change. So I'd really love to hear from, you know, congressmen, senators, you know, even local government officials, and hear them say, I'm interested in this problem, because it's true that, you know, my constituents aren't just city people, they're also farmers, and I need to listen to them, and I will fight for you and make a change.
So when you say, what does it mean to lose power on a farm, what might it mean for you and your husband, Corinne?
Well, we got lucky this year. We didn't have any major losses due to the power outage, but we can't count on that in the future. So this winter, we're going to have to maybe take out a loan and invest some money we don't really have to create a whole new electrical system with a generator. We will apply for loans to maybe get some solar, which we would love, but it's time and money that we could have invested in other parts of our business, but we're going to invest in this.
All right, Corinne, thank you. I do want to just mention quickly, I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but you did have a fire down the road from you a few days ago, and that actually happened before the power was shut off, correct?
Yes, they didn't. When the intense winds came on Sunday, they didn't shut off the power in time, and it broke a line and caused a small fire, which we have an incredible Cal Fire and local firefighter association in our valley. run by volunteers, including my husband, and they were able to keep our valley safe. So I'm very thankful for that.
Well, I thank you for your time. I hope you stay in a power positive situation right now, and I really appreciate the conversation, Corinne.
Thank you so much for listening to us, and I appreciate everything you do.
Okay, good luck to you and your husband, Robert. And again, they are the co-owners of SunTracker Farm in California's Capay Valley. Now on the phone with us is Linda Hopkins. She is the Sonoma County 5th District Supervisor. Of course, Sonoma County is the center right now of the Kincade Fire. Hi, Linda. What's your situation and where are you?
I am actually in Petaluma, which is one of the few areas of Sonoma County that actually has electricity right now. So I was under mandatory evacuation for multiple days from my home, which is in Forestville. And we actually did receive the opportunity to go back home, but having neither power nor natural gas and an eight-month-old son, that meant that I really could not safely go when we've got frigid temperatures overnight back home, and I need power to obviously to work and to stay engaged and track the fire.
How much has this been a back and forth where you think you'll have power but then you don't, and like you're just describing, I'm not sure if I can go back? Is that how it's been for days?
There has been a tremendous amount of lack of information and uncertainty in the community. I think that those of us who live in smaller rural communities have just given up and assume that we're not going to have power for a week. But, you know, I actually was supposed to have power. You know, and normally PG&E tries to give you 48 hours warning. My home was on the list to maintain power throughout the event. And then with a few hours warning, we learned that our power was going to be shut off, along with hundreds of thousands of other residents in Sonoma County.
You mentioned natural gas. We've been talking almost exclusively about electricity, but the point about natural gas is important, too. And what's involved when it's shut off?
So actually, after natural gas lines are shut off, it requires inspections of every single house. And you actually have to be home in order to let a PG&E employee into your home to relight the pilot lights for all of your natural gas appliances. So this is a very big deal. We had three communities in Sonoma County that experienced a natural gas shutoff. They were Cloverdale, Forestville, and Grayton. So I've got thousands of residents in my area that don't have natural gas, which means that you don't have hot water. So no electricity, no hot water, no heaters, and the overnight temperatures are freezing right now. So we actually just issued a code blue alert in Sonoma County as well.
What is a code blue alert?
This means that we are projected to have freezing overnight temperatures, and which are especially concerning for our unsheltered or homeless residents. So we're standing up additional shelters. We are also looking at, should we be actually standing up warming centers for some of these areas that don't have power? Lack of heat is especially concerning for babies under 1 year old, as well as our elderly population. So we're actually concerned, unfortunately, about hypothermia. We also have people who are under mandatory evacuation orders who are choosing to sleep in their cars. Obviously, cars don't have very good insulation, and so they're being exposed to very cold temperatures overnight. So in the midst of the fires, we're also facing freezing temperatures, which is just kind of a little bit hard for us to grasp, right?
Yeah, and the strange thing is the Weather Service is saying there's going to be then a bit of a warming, almost a heat wave coming next week. So the up and down has been so erratic. I do want to help locate the 5th District for people. You're in the western part of the county. It's the lower Russian River area. Part of it extends to the 101. And this is an area that's under evacuation. And you had that preemptive evacuation, correct?
We did, yes, because during the high wind event, there was no sense that we would be able to contain the fire, and there was tremendous concern that the fire would actually sweep across western Sonoma County and not stop burning until it hit the Pacific Ocean. Fortunately, thanks to the heroic efforts of our firefighters, we have thousands of firefighters here from as far away as Montana right now, Utah, Nevada, Oregon, Washington, and all across the state of California. They were able to stop it at the 101, which was a miracle.
But you're calling this area right now, at least your concerns are, it being called the disaster epicenter. And what that does to a region when people start to feel fearful about the risk of being there. Would you expand on that a bit?
Yeah, so since my time in office, I've only been in office not even quite 3 years. And I've spent 94% of my time under some kind of disaster declaration, a formal declaration at the local level, which means that we're either in disaster or recovering from disaster. We have had floods and fires interspersed with the power shutoffs and other challenges that our community has faced. We are a very tourist-dependent area in terms of our local economy. We rely on visitors who believe in Sonoma County, that it's a beautiful place to visit, you know, that you want to go there. And when we're hit with these repeated disasters, it starts to actually impact our local businesses. Our local businesses right now are heavily impacted, obviously, by the fire and by the power shutoff. A lot of them are in mandatory evacuation areas, and so they can't actually open. But in a bigger picture, sort of longer term, I think that this really impacts our ability to draw visitors in when we're constantly on the front page, you know, as being the epicenter of either a catastrophic flood or a catastrophic fire.
As a county supervisor, though, I think you are in briefings and meetings that most of the public doesn't get to be part of. And that would be true with both PG&E, CAL FIRE, and a number of the network of emergency responding agencies. So what's important for everybody else to understand that we might not know that maybe you are privy to?
I think that oftentimes the public just sort of sees, oh my goodness, there's this huge mandatory evacuation order. Why am I being ordered to evacuate when I'm many miles from the front of the fire? And what they don't see is that CAL FIRE actually comes in and is constantly running very sort of state-of-the-art, high-tech fire modeling, right? So they have systems that are feeding in all of the data about the weather forecasting, feeding in the existing fire's behavior, and then projecting out what different possibilities could look like. Just the way that, you know, meteorologists are constantly sort of updating their forecasts, they are constantly updating the fire forecast. And then when we see something that's very concerning, you know, we need to make sure that we give people adequate notice to get out. So sometimes it seems like we're doing too much. This is the largest scale evacuation that Sonoma County has ever seen, where we had pretty much half of our residents in, you know, evacuated, which is crazy, and a huge portion of the county's landmass. And so some people thought that that was maybe a little bit too much, but it was absolutely a data-driven approach, and it was absolutely made given the best information that we had available at the time. So they're constantly basically running scenarios. That's what I've learned through this process, is that they're constantly preparing for every single contingency. So we have contingency plans for our contingency plans, and a lot of those contingency plans are never daylighted because luckily the worst-case scenario doesn't always come to bear.
Linda, what do you think solutions are here? Corrine Hines was talking about burying wires and changing the infrastructure, which everybody knows is expensive. It's going to take a long time, but maybe it's a solution that's bipartisan, if you will. What do you think has to happen and on what timetables?
I think that we absolutely need to modernize our electrical grid infrastructure. And I also believe that we could actually leapfrog and start looking at local renewable energy generation and microgrid systems. Fundamentally, I really believe that PG&E is too big to succeed. I think that more regionalized approaches would actually, engage with constituents better. It would be able to respond more to local needs. We're a very, very diverse state all across California. We have very rural areas. We have very urban areas. And there are going to be different solutions for each type of area. I think that obviously the rural areas are some of the hardest to serve because we have some very old, very aging infrastructure and a huge number of miles of that electrical infrastructure. And we also have not very much in terms of a ratepayer base to support it because our populations are more sparsely sort of strung out across the county. So I think that a regionalized approach makes sense. And I do think that we need to look at seriously, how can we make these investments? Because, you know, on one hand, people say, oh, it's too expensive to bury the electrical wires. But then you look at the fire that we are currently facing and how many millions of dollars we are spending just on the response effort, let alone on recovering from the damage. And suddenly burying those lines underground doesn't look too expensive.
So we seem to be in this cycle, though, of Octobers and Novembers that have dry conditions, the fierce winds, the ferocious fires. And we're coming up on the one-year anniversary of the Camp Fire in Butte County. So with all of that in mind, how you said you have a little baby. How do you look at the future and planting yourself in your life in an area where there isn't a fast solution? And that is true. There is no fast solution.
I will be very honest. You know, I'm a parent of young kids, and I know a lot of other parents who are, you know, in the same phase of their life. We struggle a lot with anxiety. You know, we look at our kids and we wonder, what kind of a world are they going to inherit? I'm fortunate enough to represent the 55 miles of the beautiful Sonoma County coastline. We're facing sea level rise. We have seen catastrophic losses of our kelp beds. We've watched dead whales wash up on shore. Things really feel like we are at a tipping point right now. And so it's very easy to almost descend into anxiety and depression over the state of the world. The number of disasters that we've gone through over the past 3 years is more than, you know, I think that a lot of people of, you know, my parents' generation saw their entire lives. And we're just seeing it at this rapid succession, rapid fire in real time right now. But at the same time, it's stressful and anxious, you know, anxiety inducing. I also feel a tremendous opportunity where I really feel that we have this sense of urgency right now to drive immediately towards solutions. So I'm hopeful that in the next 5 years, we are going to see just really a call to action from the community, because we are fed up. We have had enough with these power shutoffs. We have had enough with these fires. We really want to see meaningful change, and we're tired of being sort of satisfied with incremental progress when it comes to, you know, maybe PG&E comes and trims some vegetation. Maybe we're able to install a few different, you know, EV chargers around the county. That is no longer enough. We need to meaningfully drive down our greenhouse gas emissions, and we need to meaningfully create adaptation plans for our new climate reality.
I want to thank you for your time and for all of what you just said to us. I really appreciate it. I know there are a lot of listening ears, and I know there are people agreeing with you right now. So thank you so much, Supervisor Hopkins.
And thank you for your coverage of this important issue.
That is Linda Hopkins. She was talking with us from Petaluma. She is the Sonoma County 5th District Supervisor. You can find ongoing coverage of the wildfires, the weather, and the power shutoffs at capradio.org. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio.